The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Yeah, well, let's use the mic for the questions.
So this may sound a little silly, but when I did remember to be mindful, my first thought was, well, now what?
Okay.
It's sort of like I didn't quite know what being mindful, it's like I wanted something to do, and I just wasn't quite sure what that was.
Okay. That's a great question.
My question is really similar. When I remembered
hold the mic up.
When I remembered to be mindful, what I experienced was like a narrator inside my head saying, okay, now I'm being mindful, but I wasn't sure what was supposed to happen.
Anyone else?
You said something about recognition when either an event was happening or you were immediately aware after the event, and I can't remember it, and I can't. I guess it sort of mystified me in terms of that intersection. What do you do there?
Okay, so these are all very similar questions. Yeah. Can you say a little bit more about?
Well, I'm trying to remember what you said in the lecture. You said something about there's a moment that you know that something. I think you said something has happened. And I can't remember whether you were saying that's a moment of recognition. I don't know.
So I was talking in a couple of different ways about last week. I was talking about using some things to help us remember, and so certain tasks throughout the day, trying to remember to be aware of certain tasks, and that when we initially recognize or remember that, we're probably not going to be doing the thing we thought we were doing, that we'll remember. Oh, I said I was going to be paying attention while I was standing up, and I'm making my bed tonight, and I know I've stood up at least 10 times in the last 3 hours, and I don't remember one. So that moment then is a moment of recognition. It's a moment of remembering. It's a moment that the practice can begin. I also talked about it in terms of recognizing or remembering difficult patterns in our experience. So, you know, choosing something that's kind of challenging for us, a pattern of anger or a pattern of frustration, something, and to try to recognize or remember when that's happening. Do you remember which one it was?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think it was the former.
Okay.
But the as you were talking, the other thing that happens to me is I live in Boulder Creek, so I drive over here 3 days a week. I drive Highway 9 and Highway 35. And there are times that I'm on automatic pilot, and it's not frightening, but it's a sort of wonder, like, gee, I don't remember going by there, and I'm already here, you know, sort of like this time has passed.
It's amazing. Yeah, over here. Oh, she found the other mic.
So. You mentioned that the event that you were using was you were transitioning between DOS and Windows, and when you made the transition, you would actually try to be mindful, right? And I thought about what I might do, and I thought, well, I'll do it every time that I turn on my smartphone to check mail or some event, and I tried it for a little while, and I want help with thinking of a better one, because that's kind of along the lines of what he was just saying. It's probably the most mindless thing to do, to actually turn on the phone to check something. And it seemed too much. maybe that's the advanced part of it, the graduate degree part of it. So I wanted some help with, like, how do you select an appropriate event?
Okay.
Because maybe you're somewhat mindful, not totally mindless, like when you're handling the phone.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll address that. I'll definitely. I'll keep taking some questions here.
So I was also wondering what you thought about using an external tool. I noticed that I have an app on my phone that's it's a meditation timer, but it also has a mindfulness bell that you could set for different times.
Uh-huh, okay.
And I thought, that's...
I might say I have one of those, and I've started ignoring it. It doesn't work for me. It just goes off all the time.
I do have some comments about that. Any other questions? Yeah, in the back.
I guess my question is sort of the same as that guy's. I decided to, when I go for a walk, to be mindful. And it just seems unbelievably hard. I don't think I've gotten more than 20 feet. You know, I feel my feet and I feel the air and look around, and then I'm a mile and a half further down the road thinking about something. And it just, I mean, what are small steps to start?
I guess. Okay. Yep. Anything else? Okay, I'll start with these. So these are all, I think most of these are really highlighting just how hard this is. I mean, this is not an easy thing, as you notice, you know. First of all, there's the remembering to be mindful, and that's kind of like, well, what do I do now? You know, there's that kind of not sure what it means to actually be mindful in daily life. You know, how do we engage with that? What does that mean? That's kind of challenging. And then there's the remembering itself, you know, that's a big part of the issue, you know, just even remembering, as some of you have said, you know, finding, you know, help with the task that will help, or, you know, the walking, wanting some suggestions for that. So I'll try to kind of address some of this, and if there's anything that comes up for you while I'm talking, feel free to raise your hand. I'm happy to take questions during this, so this doesn't have to be like a kind of a formal talk. So let's see, how to order these. I think I'll start by talking a little bit about how to make it a little bit easier to remember, or ways to engage, I mean, like with the cell phone or the walking, you know, ways to help yourself remember, because we are just so quickly pulled out into our daily, into our habitual kinds of thoughts. And when we're in the world in particular, like going for a walk, and if we're going for a walk, we'll be walking down the street, and there's so many things that we see, and our minds, the way our thoughts work, are associative. You know, so we see something, you know, we see a car go by, and it's a car that's the color of our best friend's car, and we start thinking about our best friend, and then we're off in that trajectory. Or we see a house with a tree in front of it that's particularly nice, and we start thinking about trees and planting trees in our own yard, or whatever. It's just endless the way our minds proliferate off of sense experience. And sometimes we'll come up with things out of our own mind, out of kind of whole cloth to think about. But very often, at least when I've explored it, very often the thoughts that are coming up for me in daily life are associative, that they're responding to something that I've seen. Then they very quickly hook into something that's meaningful to me, I mean, because of the associative nature of our minds. So that's like in the walking, you know, where we quickly get pulled out. With something like the cell phone, you know, typically what we're doing is, it is a mindless task, as you say. You know, it's kind of, there's a habit of doing that. You know, it's kind of that, oh, we're doing it without even thinking so much of the time. And so that very mindlessness kind of obscures the experience. So partly what I want to encourage is not to give up. Just not to give up. When I first tried this myself, I mean, actually, the very first time I met mindfulness, oh, I was probably in my 20s. I had read a book by Thich Nhat Hanh called The Miracle of Mindfulness, and it talked about mindfulness in daily life, and I liked this book, you know. I was reading it at night before I went to bed, and it's like, yeah, this makes sense. I'm going to try this tomorrow. And the next time I remember it was when I picked up the book the next night. You know, so it's like, my response to that when I was in my 20s, my response to that was, obviously I can't do this. And I put it down. And I didn't pick it up again for another, I didn't even meet mindfulness again for another, I don't know, 15 years or so, till I was in my mid to late 30s. And at that point, when I met the teachings again, I was a little more motivated, a little more interested in how to do this. And so when I started the second time, I had a particular experience that was kind of ruining my life, kind of an anger that was just coming up over and over again. And I didn't know how to deal with it. And somebody having sent me a book about mindfulness, and I'll think, okay, well, I'll try this. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I had some of the very similar things that you guys have said. You know, when I became mindful of the anger, I'm like, well, what do I do with this? You know, I have no idea what to do with this. It was like, no clue. And the other thing in terms of the switching between DOS and Windows that I had also picked, I recognized, you know, as I said, I think I said that I didn't remember, you know, a whole day would go by and I didn't remember once. But when I remembered that evening as I was making my bed, to my credit this second time, I didn't say, well, obviously I can't do this. I said, I'm just going to try again. I'm just going to try again. So this is the biggest tool in our daily life tool chest. Resolve. Keep trying. Keep trying to remember. So, for instance, with the cell phone, you could stay with that and just notice how hard it is that, you know, when you do remember is, you know, when you're at lunch or something, or when you're, you know, going home, driving home from work. Oh, yeah. So when you do remember, just acknowledge that moment. And instead of having a sense of beating yourself up about it or just saying, well, obviously that's a bad choice or I can't do that, just say, oh, I'll just keep trying. I'll just keep trying. So so that's one thing about these projects, these tasks. Just keep trying. With the walking also, I will say a few words about the walking specifically, because walking is a really great practice in daily life. We walk all the time. You know, we walk from the car to the grocery store. We walk around the grocery store. We walk through our office. We walk around our house. I mean, we're always walking. And if we can begin to have walking be a kind of a mindfulness reminder for us, what a great thing that would help to draw a kind of a thread of mindfulness through our day. So the hard part is beginning to remember. And then it is kind of challenging to continue remembering, as you said, you know, 20 feet into the walk and you start thinking about something else. And half a mile later, there you are, half a mile further on. So there are some specific walking practices that are that can be done at normal speed. I mean, many of you have perhaps been on some of the day-long retreats or longer retreats where we teach a kind of a deliberate, slow walking meditation. And, you know, they're kind of like, you know, lifting, moving, placing, you know, you're paying attention to the movement of your feet. And you're not going to do that going through the grocery store. That's not going to be very, you know, helpful You know, what we need to learn to do, I think, in our daily lives is learn how to be mindful at life speed. You know, that's part of the thing. You know, we sit in meditation and, you know, that's great. We can work at being mindful while we're sitting. But we're not sitting silent with our eyes closed very much of our lives. You know, we're engaged. So this practice of learning how to become mindful at normal life speed is a huge area of learning for us. And it's not easy. It's not, you know, straightforward. But there is one kind of walking practice that I like to suggest for people. There's two, actually. They're related. And the first one is to, if you're taking a walk, like through the neighborhood, where you're interested in seeing, can I be aware while I'm walking through the neighborhood? And there's nothing in particular that you need to do during that time. See if you can, the first thing is to see if you can connect into whether your body is relaxed or tense. Just that simple thing. And see if you can connect with a pace of walking that feels comfortable for you. So that if this is an exercise walk, that might not work. But I'll talk about that in just a minute. But if you're just walking, like from the car to the grocery store, and you remember to be mindful, see if you can walk at a pace in walking from the car to the grocery store that feels really good to your body. There's a kind of a pace of movement that will be kind of natural for the mind to resonate with in mindfulness. If we're moving too fast, it's like it's a little hard for the mind to keep up. If we're moving too slow, the mind's kind of, you know, feeling a little bit dragged down. So there is a kind of a pace at which we can move that will be a comfortable pace for our mindfulness to connect with. So you can explore that. What is the pace that feels comfortable? And you can just get a sense of, how does it feel? Where's the ease? Can I feel ease while walking? So that would be one way to approach the walking. Another one, then this can be done at any speed, whether you're doing exercise or not. And it's a kind of a four-part exploration of experience while walking. So you can alter your attention between four different areas of experience. Seeing would be the first area. So take in for the first, 10 steps, that seeing is happening. And then for the next 10 steps, you could take in hearing is happening. For the next 10 steps, take in the movement of the body, just the physicality of walking. And then for the next 10 steps, the contact of the feet on the ground. So alternating between these four areas. And I find it helpful to actually use a note or a mental label while doing this: seeing, hearing, moving, touching. And I remember the order by going top to bottom in my body: seeing, hearing, body moving through space, feet contacting the ground. So that gives you something to do, and this kind of addresses some of what some of you have talked about, something to do in the mindfulness. Because often if we don't have something specific to do, the mind will just wander off. So ultimately, in our daily life practice, we are interested in being able to wake up into what the mind is doing in daily life. That is the hope, that we can actually be mindful while we're engaged in conversation, while we're engaged in shopping, while we're engaged in talking on the phone, while we're engaged in working on the computer, while we're engaged in checking our text messages or whatever we're engaged in, that we can actually be aware and noticing how this impacts us. And this is where this, I talked last time about this 50-50 split in, or 50-50, you know, 50% of the attention on what we're doing and 50% of the attention on how it's impacting us. So, you know, you're reading an email message and it's got some content, you know, you're responding to the content, So know that there's the content, and then kind of check in. And how is this impacting me? You know, what is happening in my heart, in my body? Does this reading this message make me feel tense? Does it make me feel relaxed? So that ultimately our practice in daily life does open up to be able to actually be present for whatever's happening and to know how it's landing with us. That's kind of our hope, that we can see how it's landing and then begin to recognize when we're getting ready to be hooked into habitual tendencies of anger or frustration or depression or hostility or wanting or whatever, so that we can begin to see that. In seeing that, we begin to have a choice about how we respond. So everything that I talk about in terms of the basics of being aware in our daily lives is ultimately moving in that direction, that we will be able to be aware while we're taking out our cell phone and checking our messages. So this is one practice, this walking practice, that can help to kind of keep you here a little bit. If you remember to start it, it may help to keep you going a little bit. And do know that, yes, this is really challenging. So to not be hard on yourself when you see, oh yeah, I was lost in thought for the last half mile. you know, this kind of thing. The Buddha used this image of swimming against the stream. That we've got this current of how our minds typically work. And in trying to engage with meeting our experience and being mindful of it, we're going against that current of mindlessness that we have so practiced. So it's extremely difficult, especially in daily life, to kind of break into that current. So in terms of checking, your question of can I get help with, you know, this a better thing to check in with. Something that you do, I mean, the actually pulling the cell phone out of your pocket is an intentional action, but it's probably been practiced so mindlessly for so long that it's kind of a habit, which may make it a little more difficult to engage with. I would keep trying with it, though. I would keep trying with it, but you might want to add another one and see whether it's any easier for you. I mean, we see actually that we, as somebody said, you know, oh, living on autopilot, you know, that we just get going and we go. That's part of what this kind of exercise reveals to us, is how little the mindfulness actually breaks in, you know, how little we actually recognize the mindfulness. So you could try a couple of, there's a couple of other things that might be helpful. One is going from standing to sitting. I've often, when people, we do this daily life practice retreat, I suggest this exercise of finding something that happens regularly through your day. And a lot of people choose standing up as something to pay attention to, but many of them say that they end up switching to sitting down because you're slowing down when you're going into the sitting posture. And when you're moving into the standing, you're often, your mind is already wherever you're going, so that it's harder to remember that. So the movement from sitting, from standing to sitting, because you're already slowing down a little bit, might be a little bit easier. But it's not easy. I mean, none of this is easy. So really, as I said last time, I think I ended with resolve and patience being crucial in this. And I also found in my own practice, you know, I did when I first did this, and this was my very first practice. I didn't sit in meditation for my very first practice. I did this daily life practice. I actually wasn't interested in sitting meditation. Didn't particularly interest me. But I was interested in understanding my mind. I was interested in understanding how, you know, this anger that I was being, you know, ruled by, what it would, if there was any possibility of getting some space around that anger. And so in, I'll get to you in just a sec, in choosing what I was going to explore, I picked these two things. One was the switching between DOS and Windows on my computer, and one was this exploration of anger. And that exploration of anger had a lot of juice to it. It wasn't at all boring. It did have this sense of, what do I do with this? You know, what does it even mean to be mindful of anger? But there was a lot of, I mean, there was a lot of interest in my mind to explore. Can I do this? Can I explore what it means to be angry? So that exploration was part of my practice. And this other exploration around switching between DOS and Windows was an interesting counterbalance to that, because it, you know, when I was doing the practice around the anger, every time I remembered about it, experience was really unpleasant. You know, it's like I wake up into anger and it feels really yucky. Whereas the switching between DOS and Windows was just happening at kind of random times through the day, and so it had kind of a chance to happen when things were kind of neutral or maybe a little pleasant. You know, so it gave me an opportunity to get a sense of what it means to connect with awareness and mindfulness at kind of random times through the day. But it was counterbalanced also by this really particularly interesting, juicy exploration. I was really interested in understanding my mind around the anger. So having the interest or having a reason why you're interested in exploring mindfulness also really helps. So if you can, that's one thing I think I suggested last week, is to pick something that you're really interested in exploring, really interested in understanding, so that can help to spur the interest in the mindfulness, the exploration of mindfulness. So what was your question? Give him the mic.
Has the anger expired at the present moment?
At this time, that particular anger was an anger at a particular person around a particular circumstance, and it was a pretty intense circumstance in my life. It took a couple of years, for that to go away, and
you let it go.
Well, I kept watching it and kept experiencing the feeling and letting go as best I could. And over time, it slowly wound itself out. And then it became replaced by a sense of metta.
Metta. You became peaceful.
I became peaceful, and then I had a sense of wishing that person that I was angry with well. So there's none of that left.
Wish for what? For that person? For what?
Wishing them well.
Wishing them well.
Wishing them well. Wishing that they'd be happy.
You showed them a little loving kindness,
yes,
in your mind.
Yes. Yeah, and it didn't have to do that intentionally. That's just what happened. Yeah.
So
this practice, at least in my experience, has huge benefit, huge potential.
Concentration could help too, right?
Concentration can help, but in our daily lives, finding that kind of concentration can help in that. Well, that was another thing. After about 3 or 4 months of doing this daily life practice, I finally realized maybe the reason they call it practice is so that it's easier, gets better to do this in our daily lives. And so I did begin sitting to meditate after about 3 or 4 months of engaging with this daily life practice. And I did use that time as concentration practice, and it was like a respite for me. You know, my life was kind of a mess, but when I sat down in meditation, I just kind of paid attention to my breath, and it was like a relief in a way. So that, I think, also supported me ultimately, that concentration that came from that stability. But in our daily lives, the concentration is a different kind. You know, it's not this.
Well, you just tell the anger to go away. Keep concentrating on telling it to go away. It's going away.
Are you sure? I mean, that you have to take care with something like that, that it's not an aversion. You know, go away, anger. Go away. Go away. The exploration in mindfulness is around allowing and meeting, opening to, not repressing.
And compassion, it all has to work. It all has to work together.
To
walk away from it. Your mind has to walk away from
the
it.
The mind walks away from it on its own eventually. That's my experience.
It takes time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's see. So then these questions around. Another question about using an external tool before I get to what to do. But now what? So using an external tool, using a meditation timer or something. That can be interesting. Some people do find, as you did, that you start ignoring it. But it can be a support to include on your computer, you know, once an hour or once every 15 minutes, a nice sounding bell, or on your iPod or your iPhone, include, you know, to have that bell sound. See if you could take, at that moment, take a mindful breath. For the daily life practice, part of what we're aiming for is the ability to wake up just into the midst of whatever's happening. And to not necessarily have something on the outside helping us to remember. There's another benefit to picking something that is you intentionally do. I mean, some people have asked about, what about the telephone ringing? You know, what about using the telephone ringing? That's coming from outside, so it can kind of help to wake us up, and I would encourage you to use that. Actually, that's a great practice, you know, using the telephone. Let it ring 3 times before you pick it up, and use that time to be mindful, breathe, let go of whatever you were doing, let yourself breathe for those 3 rings, and then you might have a chance of actually being present for the person on the other end of the phone. So that's a good tool to use. But I like to suggest for people to pick something that you're intentionally doing, like switching between DOS and Windows for me, or, you know, sending email, or closing a window on the computer, or turning on a device, or going through doorways, or standing up, or sitting down, or touching things, reaching things, extending for things. Something you're doing intentionally. Because, again, this is a training. What begins to happen as you explore this, is you begin to recognize over time, and this takes, you know, a couple weeks of doing this kind of thing. So you're practicing with standing up, you know, so taking some time, you know, to get to the place where you actually remember when you're standing up. It'll be several days before you get to that place. At that point, it can begin to happen that the standing up kind of triggers the mindfulness. You know, that we actually recognize that mindfulness returns because we're getting ready to take an action that's been associated with mindfulness. And this is really powerful, actually. When we do this daily life practice retreat, people who've done it multiple times say, I started in on this retreat and I picked, you know, standing up this time, but last time I was doing touching things, and suddenly I'm being mindful when I'm touching things again because of that that kind of pattern of being mindful while doing something. So that picking something that's intentionally done begins to associate mindfulness with those intentional actions. And that's really helpful. The other thing that we begin to see is that as we explore doing something like standing up, and again, you know, this seems like such a mundane thing, right? You know, standing up. Why pay attention to standing up? Partly, it's just to begin to get a sense of what it means to be mindful in our daily life. But another thing that it begins to show us is that over time we begin to see, because this mindfulness is associated with standing up, something about that practice of being aware when you're standing up every time begins to, at some point you begin to know, you're sitting at your desk and you become mindful that you're about to stand up. So you become aware of the intention to do something before it actually happens. This is a really powerful moment in our lives. This is the moment of intending that every single action that we do, whether of body, of speech, of mind, is preceded by an intention towards that action. And the Buddha pointed to that moment as being the key to our happiness. He said that when we can begin to see those moments of intention, we can recognize, along with every one of those moments of intention, is associated a motivation, a reason why we're getting ready to do that. And when we can see the intention to do something before we've started that action, we can usually also see the reason. We can usually see the motivation that's associated with it. And in seeing that motivation, we can begin to use discernment to say, is this something I actually want to do? Do I want these words to come out of my mouth right now? So we can have a choice. It's very powerful to begin to see this moment of intention. And in this is a crucial aspect of our daily life practice. Yeah.
That was my question when I first tried to form it, that moment of intention.
Okay.
And you answered it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Yeah, okay. Dueling mics.
So I understand the idea of the practice in kind of a methodical and systematic way to be able to get at this. What I find also, however, is that during the day, periodically, I'll have a feeling, sort of like when I'm meditating, where my mind comes back. And I say to myself, be aware. And I am present at that moment. Uh-huh. And I'm aware. Typically, it's because I've just come awake to a particular emotion that I just name, or I just I notice it.
Yes.
Right? So it seems to me like there's also the possibility of not just the sort of systematic practice, right? But it'd be pretty interesting to have, for example, and I feel good when I do that, right? It's to kind of reinforce that, right?
Yes.
That's the other way to go about it.
Yes, absolutely. And that generally happens a little bit later for people in the practice, because the recognition or the familiarity with, like, oh, I'm back,
right,
is something that these other tools are beginning to point to. It's like, oh, this moment of becoming aware, oh, I'm back. That moment of remembering, as in the sitting meditation, it's just like waking up and say, oh, my mind was wandering, I'm back. That moment is crucial. And in daily life practice, yes, if you notice that, highlighting that, that's another avenue of practice. If you can notice and highlight that moment of mindfulness itself, that begins to strengthen and that's a whole practice in and of itself, recognizing when mindfulness returns. The more familiar you get with that, the kind of the emphasis you put on that, oh, this is what it's like to be back. And this is partly, I think, an answer to your question. You know, it's like there's nothing particular to do, actually, when you wake up, except perhaps to recognize, what's the difference? I mean, one of the keys here is, what's the difference between the way it felt before and the way it feels now? That kind of begins to highlight what mindfulness itself feels like. And then getting familiar with that begins to point it out to us as it happens all the time. It actually happens a lot for us, but I think, as I said last week, we typically, you know, get caught by what we've become mindful of, as opposed to, oh, I've become aware that I'm walking across the street right now. It's like, no, we become aware and it's like, oh yeah, where am I going? You know, so we miss the fact that we've become aware. So highlighting that is huge. So thank you for bringing that up. Let's see. So in terms of what to do when you remember, and then, let's see, you talked about a narrator. What did you mean by that? That you start just telling yourself what you're doing? That, oh, now this is what's happening, and now this is what's happening? So in daily life practice, I don't usually... I mean, it's kind of a funny thing, you know? It's like, when you become mindful, you could say, oh, what do I do with this? I need to pay attention to my body. Oh, I've become aware of my emotions, so I need to explore that emotion and get to know what it is. That would be what we did in sitting meditation, that when we come back, we kind of do some investigation. In daily life, if we start picking up mindfulness like a project, we'll quickly stop doing it because it starts to become a burden. It starts to feel like, oh yeah, I become mindful, I haven't got time for this. And then we let it go. Whereas what I'm trying to get people familiar with are these moments of very light mindfulness. Just, oh, here's mindfulness. What do I do with this? I just go on with my day. There can be a sense of, you know, kind of riding that mindfulness, just noticing whatever you're noticing, and then, you know, your mind will pick up on something else. And what the way in that I suggest for mindfulness in daily life is to try to find ways to get more of those brief moments of very light mindfulness. And then they begin to hook up. And then we find ourselves able to be mindful for longer periods of time. So I would say there's not particularly something to do with it, except, as I said earlier, notice, what is it like? What's the difference? That moment of remembering gives you an opportunity to check in and recognize the difference between what it felt like to be lost. I mean, you can't really know what it's like to be lost because you're lost. But in the moment where your mindfulness returns, there's a kind of a distinction between what it feels like now and what it felt like 10 seconds ago. So get familiar. Just kind of see if you can kind of highlight that difference for yourself. And keep it really light. You know, keep it really, really light. Now, in terms of the narrator... the other question you had was like, not sure what's supposed to happen. There's nothing in particular that's supposed to happen. Life happens, and we're aiming towards trying to become aware of life. And the purpose behind that is not just to be aware of our minds doing whatever, but to begin to be able to make skillful choices so that as we begin to be more mindful throughout our day, we begin to notice when our minds are kind of heading in a direction that may not be so helpful. Oh, I'm heading down that path. Maybe we can begin to let it go, not with aversion, but just, oh, that's not so helpful. I know that's not so helpful. So we begin to have some choice. The more mindfulness kind of moves into daily life, the more choice we have about the way our minds work. When we think we're at the mercy of our minds, so often we feel like we're just at the mercy of our minds. You know, we'd change them if we could, but it's so hard to change them. This is a way to change the mind, but it does take patience. It takes resolve. It takes patience to be able to, first of all we do is we gather data. There's this analogy that one of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, uses that I like. He talks about this data gathering being a large part of kind of how we engage in our mindfulness practice. You know, it's like we're not trying to do anything with the data particularly. We're gathering information. And as we gather this information, slowly patterns become apparent to us. And we begin, our minds kind of naturally begin to make sense of them. So the analogy that he uses is like, imagine what it was like for the very first Homo sapiens to look up at the stars. You know, there's just this night sky with these amazing stars up there.
Firmament.
The firmament.
It's permanent.
I would not say that.
The sky is permanent.
So they're looking up at the stars, and they want to understand something about the stars. So what do they do? I mean, how can they do that? Every single night, they have to go out and look at them. They go out and look at them over and over again, every night, looking at them. They begin to see, perhaps, some patterns that are familiar. They begin to see that the patterns shift through the seasons. They begin to see, perhaps, that there are certain stars up there that behave a little differently. They don't just stay, you know, in the same orientation as everything else, but they kind of move through that pattern, the planets. So they begin to gather information just through this willingness to go out there and look every night. And slowly, over that willingness to meet that experience over and over again, the patterns begin to make some sense. We begin to understand something about them. So similarly, in exploring our own minds, our own habits and patterns, at first we feel like we're at the mercy of our habits and patterns. It's like, oh, here's this one again, here's this one again, how does this happen? And over time we begin to see how it does happen. The data that we gather by being willing to meet it over and over again begins to show us how this anger comes to be, how this frustration or this depression comes to be. So we begin to understand something about our minds. And that understanding itself, sometimes we can use that understanding to make a choice. Oh, I see that the mind is kind of headed towards anger. Not so helpful. Maybe I can at least not act that way. Even if I am feeling it kind of beginning to bubble up, maybe I don't have to let it come out in my voice or come out in my speech or come out in my behavior. So we begin to be able to make some choices that way. But I found actually one of the most powerful things about this data gathering is that the mind begins to understand on its own how to let go of these things. You know, that the mind sees this movement towards anger. And it's, you know, this was my experience. I don't remember if I described this last week or not. That I spent a long time gathering the data of anger, waking up into anger, recognizing, ah, oh, this feels awful. That was the experience. Waking up into the anger, noticing how it felt over and over again. And then one day I was doing something and I saw a thought in my mind about the person I was angry with. And I saw, because of that thought, the mind kind of wanted to leap on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry at that person. And the mind saw all of this in kind of a split second, saw this happening. And the mind itself, I did not have to do anything here. The mind itself knew that way lies unpleasant experience. That way lies anger. That way lies pain and suffering for this being. I had spent enough time exploring it that I knew directly that experience. The mind, seeing it was headed towards creating its own suffering, let go. It just, it was like, you know, how your hand might let go of a pot touching a hot pot on a stove. If you reach out and it's like, oh, you know, it's like, don't go there, you know. The body recoiled from that pain. In this way, the mind just moved away from that pain because it knew that suffering was going to follow. So this data gathering, you know, we don't actually have to do anything with it except be willing to meet our experience over and over again. Be willing to gather the data of our minds. So did you have another question?
Well, when you gather the data of your mind, And you're gathering the data of your mind, of the information, and you look at the, you become conscious of the heavens. And that makes you more aware of your daily life, and you answer the question that you just let go of the anger because you're more aware.
That's right. The awareness itself begins to allow the mind to let it go. But it takes time. I mean, that was not that. I mean, that didn't happen like that.
You become conscious of the sky, broadens your mind, and the scope of your mind will make you aware of the let go of the anger.
It does that eventually. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you again.
Let's see. Did I get all of these? I think I touched into all of the questions. We have a couple minutes. If there's anything else that anybody wants to say, or yeah,
could you just hear you speak about balance one more time?
Balance?
How we get balanced.
How we get balanced. So the balance of mind, I mean, basically I think what you're talking about is that as we bring attention to experience, you know, sometimes as we're paying attention to something, we begin to recognize, oh, I'm paying attention to this in order that it will go away. Or so that we have an agenda, kind of an agenda in our minds. And so the part of the practice is to begin to recognize that we have agendas around the mindfulness. So that we, it's not to, the way to balance in our mind is to recognize the lack of balance. So we recognize, oh, I'm paying attention to this with an, you know, paying attention to this pain in my knee, and I hate this pain in my knee. You know, if we're just paying attention to the pain in our knee and we don't see that attitude of hating it, then our mind isn't balanced. But we can recognize, oh, I'm hating that pain in my knee. Hating is what's happening right now. And so we can recognize, oh, okay, that's what's going on. There's the pain, there's this feeling of hating, and that begins to balance the mind, to just recognize. It's kind of like what we take what has been kind of behind the scenes or hidden in our, you know, not able to see. We weren't able to see that we hated that experience. But when mindfulness kind of opens up and recognizes, oh, yeah, that hatred is there, it comes into kind of the field of our awareness. Sometimes I use this analogy of like having glasses on. You know, we're looking through a filter or a lens of hatred, and we don't know we're looking through that lens. Everything is colored by that red color that we're looking through that particular lens. But what can begin to happen, I mean, the first thing that might happen is that we know, oh, okay, I'm looking through this red lens, so everything is kind of tinged because of that. So that's one step. And then eventually we begin to be able to actually take off that lens and actually look at it directly. Oh, hatred is happening right now. And I can be at ease knowing that that is coming up in my mind. So that we're not invested in it. We're not identifying with it. It's actually the identification with it that creates the imbalance. When it's just a passing state of mind, we can see a balanced mind will see that for what it is, and it will come and it will go without necessarily causing any harm. So the way to balance is to keep recognizing, okay, and so maybe hatred comes up in your mind, and then there's a sense of frustration. Oh, there's that hatred again. Oh, I'm so sick of that hatred. Oh, there's frustration. Okay. So kind of we follow back the imbalance. And at some point, one thing I've often found is that at some point, when I really meet the thing that's kind of front and center that I haven't noticed, oh, it's frustration that's happening right now. That's what's going on. It's kind of like the whole mind kind of relaxes. Oh, yeah, frustration. That's what's going on right now. So that was a little three-minute summary of balance. That could be a whole talk. Maybe I'll talk about that when I get back. I am leaving on retreat. I'm going to do my own retreat this time, a 6-week retreat, for myself at the Forest Refuge, so I'll be away for 6 weeks. And I have invited a number of people to come, so I hope that you enjoy their talks as well, and I'll see you when I get back. Thank you. Thank you for your participation.